Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred with your host, Tony Moore. Here we talk about how to take responsibility for your decisions, stop hurting people, become a positive force in your community, and end the criminal thinking that deters everyone.
Good morning. Welcome to another podcast. How you doing, Scott? We're doing the Criminal Thinking Deterred podcast. And today my guest is going to be my good friend, Scott Durkin. And we're going to be talking about the really dramatic life and testimony that he got, that he has, that he come through some traumatic events. And now he's living in a way that the ideal for us in criminal thinking deterred to get an ideal that is possible to change your life. Good morning, Scott. How you doing?
Good morning. Glad to be here. I'm doing well, as best I can be. Yes. I'm doing well, considering.
Yes. Well, I'm glad to have you on as my guest. And we're with my producer, Phil, and our editor, Earl. And we just want to ask you a few questions this morning. We know you had an incident over the week, and you got hurt at the job, and we're glad that you were able to come on and share with us. We really feel privileged that you and honored that you come on, because you got a heck of a story. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got through our program, and coming through our program, what you learned.
Well, I had a traumatic experience. I was doing drugs with my ex, and I got hooked on heroin and crack and doing bad things. And then that is my child's mom. She passed away, and I blamed myself for her dying. And I started smoking crack and shooting heroin like no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And to the point that the state came and deemed me unfit to raise children. And I lost my job, my house. I was strung out, homeless, and then put on probation, and then through the probation service, they hooked me up with Birds of a Feather to do an intake and do an aftercare, you know, drug program through Tony Moore and Birds of a Feather. And then there's when I decided I had to make things right to get my kids back. So I got clean because I had to get my children back and make things right. And that's why I went to the class. I met Tony Moore, and I listened to you talk, and it resonated everything that you said. And when Tony spoke, I felt it in my heart. Most people hear it, feel it in their head, and you know, and I felt everything that you said. I took it to heart. And your own story resonated with me and what I was going through, and my children didn't deserve to lose both parents. So the mom was gone, and I didn't want to OD and die, and my kids wouldn't have a chance in hell to have a normal life, so I wanted to make things right and get clean for me. And listening to you and being part of Birds of Feather, it spoke volumes. You know, I had parenting classes and anger management and all the classes that Moore and Associates had to offer. Mm-hmm. And just listening to you did wonders for my life.
And it wasn't always an easy task for you to just stop because you're listening to me. So when me and you had our first impactful meeting, when you tried to bring the P in, how did that work for you?
Well, it didn't work out at all. You know, I come in, I was getting high and still getting high coming to the meetings. And I thought I could get away with it, you know, and they did a drug test, and I tried to bring in P to fake my test. And then I got busted, and I had to tell the PO, and they told me this is my last chance. If I don't get clean, they're going to terminate my rights to my kids. I'm going to prison, you know? So I just, like, I give up, you know? And I stopped trying to live my life my way, you know? So obviously, you know, living life on life's terms is how it is. And I was trying to live life on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got caught up, and I've been clean. Listening to everybody's stories of Birds of a Feather and seeing where them people were and where I'm at. And I just didn't want to do that to my kids anymore.
You've been clean how long now?
I've been clean over 6 years. See, 2013, I think I got she died May 20th at 13, and then I got introduced to Birds of a Feather probably at the end of that, beginning of 2014. And originally I got clean because I had to make things right to get my kids back. Not that I wanted to per se, but when everybody's on probation, everybody's clean on probation, everybody's flying right on probation. But come talk to you when you've been off probation for 6 months and see how clean you are. You know, and I took the classes to get clean, took your class and did the steps, and everything was fine. And when probation is out of my life, social service is out of my life, you know, and I quit coming to classes at Tony Moore's. I quit coming, you know, thinking there's no sense kicking a dead horse. I don't need this. I'm clean. And then the reality is, you know, people, places, and things. I ran into somebody, and I thought, well, I can do this once in a while. You know, no one's going to know. And sure, I probably got away with it for a few weeks, but I went into full-blown addiction again within 6 months, and I was right back to where I was. And then I got lost my job at We Energies, and I was coming home, and I kind of did the thing of, like, Jesus takes the wheel. You know, I was like, I give up. I can't do this because I know if I'm going to get busted, they're going to terminate my rights to my kids, and it's over. So I decided to get clean because I wanted to be clean, not to get clean because I had to for probation, parole, or anybody. You know, I got clean because I wanted it, because otherwise, you know, I get busted or terminate my rights to my kids, and it's just done. Yeah. So I decided, I knew what it took to get clean the first time. I went to counseling, Birds of a Feather, you know, to the methadone clinic. And then, so I knew all the steps to take to get clean because I got clean the first time. So I just went and repeated that. I knew, I went and did the steps that got me clean the first time. So this way, the difference was, is I did it because I wanted it for me, not because I had to, per se. You know, and then someone came to me and they're like, well, why did you go back to drugs if you knew what was going to happen, that you would lose your kids and it'd terminate your rights? I'm like, well, that's just what us addicts do. We get high, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this time around, I'm like, I wanted it for me, you know, because I had to do it for me to make things, because my kids wouldn't have a chance in hell to have a normal life if I wouldn't OD and die. And I didn't want my kids, people to be like, oh, Scott Durkin was your dad, you know, or feel bad, or have, my kids got my name. We share the same name. And I didn't want anybody to look down on him for being my son, or they're like, oh, he's your father. I don't want to leave a legacy that way. You know, if I'm going to leave a legacy that I came back from adversity and did better, not leave a legacy of, you know, my dad was a drug addict and he wasn't for nothing, you know. So okay. I decided I'm going to do it for me, and life's been amazing ever since. You know, I go, and what I knew is I continue to go to Birds of Feather and go to the classes. Not so much that I need it, but I need to see where the people are now and where I am and where I used to be. So when I go to the meetings, I see the people who are in active recovery or active addiction or just trying to get clean. And I see where they are and I see how far I got. And it does a lot for me. So, listen to Charles.
Mm-hmm. So what's most impactful to you in the return, as you re-enter treatment and stay engaged, what's the most impactful thing you learn from the materials we use or the experience?
Well, for me, I was taught to be present in my children's lives, you know, because I wasn't present. I was too busy getting high and running around and chasing. Every morning it was to get up chasing a drug or chasing something. And not to be chasing anything, is to being present in my kids' life. And
how old is Scotty?
Scotty's 19 now. I got in trouble 10 years ago. His mom passed away 10 years ago this May. And I was full-blown in addiction. I got busted at a drug house maybe 9.5 years ago. So I've been coming to Birds of a Feather for 9.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a far cry from where I was, from where I am now to where I was. You know, life's different. When I first started at Birds of a Feather, I was homeless, strung out. Kids were taken from me, deemed unfit to raise kids. Now I have a beautiful home on the lake. I got a good job. I have custody of my children. Doing excellent in school, and life is 9 day difference from what it was when I first came to see you and Charles and Willie.
So now you didn't advance yourself in the 9 years. I see you got a shirt enterprise out that you designed some shirts. Tell me a little bit about the shirts that you designed.
I did a retired, it's called Retired Junkie. And then it's just to the addicts about it is possible to live your dreams, to screw up your life to the nines, and just, I mean, literally destroy your life, and then to get it back, to overcome adversity. Because if I can do it, anybody can do it, you know. And I went from being strung out on drugs and children to get everything back, if you will. I mean, I've lost everything. And what I've learned is it's the little things you do every day in life. And it's a cliche and it sounds crazy or whatever, but you know, just do the right thing when no one is watching. You know, just keep doing the next right thing. And your life is in the daily habits. You know, everything that you do in your life, it's in a daily, it's a small daily things you do every day that add up into something greater. It can add up into something very bad. So I learned life, your life is in your daily habits, your daily rituals, smalls of your daily life. That's where your life is. And I just wanted to be a dad and raise my kids and be happy. And this is not how I thought my life was going to turn out. I didn't think I was going to be a drug addict, you know, or lose my children and become a heroin junkie and a crackhead. It's not how I thought my life was going to turn out. Nor that's how, not how I was going to end my life. I figured the first half of my life was shit. The last half of my life, I wasn't going to go out that way, you know. So I lived every which way but a good life, and I want to know what a good life is and how to live a good life. So all I've been doing now for years is to try to live the best life I can for me and my kids. Because I don't want them to resent me and hate me later on down the road for everything that I've done, you know.
So
And
the shirt sales are working, or have you sold any, or have you given any away?
I haven't sold any shirts for a while. Kind of been on a back burner due to just life in general, raising kids and working. So, I mean, it started off something I wanted to get into, but I haven't pursued it. So I've been wearing the shirts. I mean, the back, they're all geared towards addicts and little sayings on the back. Like it's a hero, like Harris says. The heroine in you or the hero in you. I'd have to show you the shirts. In fact, I'm wearing one right now. I gave you a few. I gave Charles some. And I would like to continue the shirts and sell, you know, just from a retired junkie's perspective that you can screw your life up and then turn it around and make your life amazing, that more amazing than you thought you could.
Well, I want to share with our audience an underlying issue that you had coming in that as a young child that you had to deal with as a grown man. When your father died in your arms, how did you bounce back mentally from that trauma?
I don't really think I bounced back right away. You know, I took him on a road trip to Arkansas and we were there. They were hanging out at his friend's house and I had an hour to kill because I was going to go whitewater rafting. And something wasn't right. It just felt weird, like being in this guy's apartment I had an hour to kill before I had to go. And things were getting weirder as the moment was going by, the cobwebs, the cracks in the ceilings, and I getting weird. And like, I wanted to go home. I knew I wanted to go home. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be here. And I'm like, well, and I told my dad, I'm like, well, I want to go home. And if he doesn't want to go home, we're going to go get a hotel, but I don't want to be in his house. It's just giving me the weird feeling. And then he's like, well, get the car. Let's go home. So he goes, I get the car, pull it around. He hops in and get up on the highway. Like, we're going home, Dad. And I look over, he's having a massive heart attack, dies on me in the middle of the mountains in Arkansas, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. So I pull over the side of the highway, I pull him out of the car. And I laid there for an hour in a ditch with him before anybody pulled up, showed up. This is before everybody had a cell phone. This is back in 19 or 2005. This happened October 5th. So I laid here in a ditch in the mountains with my dad, just brushing his hair, smelling him, and just holding him. And that was the coldest and most intimate thing I've ever experienced in my life. I've never experienced death of anybody prior to that. And have your dad die in your arms and you close his eyes with your fingers. I had to close his eyes and I just laid there in a fetal position, just holding him and hugging him, and for over an hour before anybody pulled over. And that was hard. And so I didn't really get over it. I turned to drugs. I went and got high as soon as I got back to Wisconsin. I never really, had counseling, or I've always turned to drugs for whatever. And then my son's mom, she passed away, and I blamed myself for her death. And so I really started doing drugs like no tomorrow and getting high. And to the point I got busted at a drug house, and then I was facing jail and prison. And I got brought to Birds of a Feather, and I met you. And then I got out of jail, and then you're like, "Did you have treatment?" And I said, "I went to jail." And you're like, "Well, jail's not treatment." I'm like, "No, then I've never had treatment before." And that started my journey at Birds of a Feather, listening to everybody else and you talk, and just listening to you telling you about your experience and your daughter. "Why can't you raise me?" It's a story about, your daughter asking you that, and then, "Well, why can't I raise my kid?" And the fruit of your tree. And then another resident, you talk about the tree, or the branches of a tree, and that you're the trunk of the tree, and basically your children are the leaves and the branches. And but you got to take care of you first before you can take care of your kids. So I learned that I had to take care of me before I could take care of my kids. And then if I do take care of myself the right way, then my kids automatically benefit. I don't have to go try to take care of my kids. I don't have to overextend myself to do this for my kids or do this or that, or I just need to take care of me. I need to take care of me, mind, body, soul. If I take care of myself and do the right thing that I'm supposed to be doing, then my kids automatically benefit from that. So I since I got clean, because I wanted to be clean and see how amazing life can be, my kids have just benefited like no tomorrow. I've been able to my kids take them places, be present in their life more than I've ever done ever. In that, and I could only do that by if I took care of myself first and loved myself enough to take care of myself, and be present in my children's lives. So one of the biggest things is just be present. I've always been present, been in my kids' life, but mentally I wasn't there. I was out doing drugs, getting high, but physically I was there for my kids. I was always there. I just wasn't mentally, because my mind's racing to go get higher, the next fix, the next drug. And in reality,
So have you slowed down the mental side of your mind from the always having to go, 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 go? Have you slowed down and been able to deal with the new Scott?
slowing down, yeah, because I mean, you go from running, chasing drugs to not doing anything, So I mean, you can be, I don't know how where to put it, but I mean, you can be sober and still fixated. Like, I'm not really sure the words I'm trying to think of, but I slow down. I've been trying to be just present in my own life, and then enjoying life, enjoying watching the grass grow, instead of constantly running and chasing.
Well,
I ain't chasing.
what made you stop the criminal behavior? The chasing of the drugs, the possessing of the drugs,
Well, I was
the
never
pills.
drugged. The criminal behavior came from the wanting to get high. You got to pay to get high. You're not going to work. You're not doing 9 to 5 and then taking your paycheck. You need drugs. You need to find a way to get the drugs. You're stealing or lying to your friends or thieving out of somebody's car. The criminal thinking is the drug seeking, the drug chasing. I had to resolve the issue of the drugs. Well, I had my past. I had to let the past go. I had like she was gonna my ex was gonna die no matter what. I can't control what other people do. I didn't pull the trigger. I didn't kill her. She took her own life, and I blamed myself for her dying. And the reality is, I didn't do it. She did it to herself, and I had to stop blaming myself. And then I had to take care of that before I could resolve the drug issue, because nobody wakes up in the morning and wants to become an addict. Nobody wakes up and says, "I'm gonna be a junkie." Or no child's gonna grow up. They want to be a fireman. They want to be a police chief. No child's gonna say, "I want to grow up and be an addict." It's always something traumatic that happens to you in life that just changes everything. My father passing away, my son's mom dying, the whole whirlwind, you know, and then you use drugs to compensate or to cope with life in reality. You know, and what I'd done, I just chose poorly how to handle life on life's terms. I chose very poorly how to handle life on life's terms. I chose drugs to deal with it, knowing that I have a 10-year-old boy going through living hell sober, losing his mom, and I had to go, you know, shoot some heroin in my arms and smoke crack to poor me. So issues before I could resolve getting clean and sober, you know, and way around, I tried to get clean. I went to got clean because I had to get make it right, get my kids back. But I didn't resolve the issues, the underlying issues that got me getting high in the first place. You know, so if you get, resolve the issues, you stop getting high, and then the criminal thinking, you stop chasing the drugs to pay for it because you don't really care about anybody other than getting high and how you're going to get that next fix, whether you got to steal from somebody or break into things or doing bad things to get the money. Because, you know, after a while, no one's. Go ahead.
So is it possible? Is it possible to live a normal, changed life?
100%. You just got to want it as bad as you want to breathe. You know, because no one's going to get clean. No one gets sober. No one does anything until they're ready, you know, or their rock bottom, whatever their rock bottom is. You know, my rock bottom, you know, I had to lose everything, my children, and been faced with prison. You know, to realize, hey, if you don't fucking clean up, you know, your kids ain't gonna want nothing to do with you. You know, they're gonna resent you and hate you, and they're not gonna have a chance in hell to have a normal life. So I had to figure it out real quick. And I wish it wouldn't took me as long as it did to figure it out that.
So the addiction to heroin, is it different from the addiction of cocaine?
No, because it's a physical. Because I mean, it's mental. It's mental and physical. Kind of like trying to quit smoking. You know that mental about having a cigarette in your hand, or of that physical draw of needing it, the chemical. You know, it's still that body needing that chemical. But in reality is you gotta want to be clean as bad as you want to breathe. You gotta want it for you. You can't get clean because you're doing it for your kids. I couldn't get clean for my children. That's why I attempted to, and that was what I was basing it off of, is, well, I'm gonna get clean for my kids and make it right for my children. But in the reality, it doesn't work that way. You gotta want to be clean for you. You want to be sick and tired of being sick. I mean, you've heard that before. You know, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that's true. And I just got to the point that I got sick and tired of being sick and tired of chasing drugs and having nothing to show for nothing in my 40s. And you know, and I didn't want to die this way. I didn't want to die, you know, with my kids hating and resenting me and then having nothing to show for nothing and then just being remembered as a drug addict. You know, that's not how I started out. I started off as a great guy. I had, you know, my child, I had a young son and a beautiful wife, and everything was great. And then just drugs took it all away, destroyed everything, you know.
So
But
now you've been sober for a few years, and you had an article put in the newspaper. Who was your judge at that time when you had the newspaper article talking about the success of you living life on in the knowledge of a second chance? Who was the judge of that?
I think it was a court commissioner. I really don't recall. I just don't offhand. It was a family court commissioner. I don't recall. That was like they gave me steps to do and to get my kids back, and I did everything they wanted me to do. And then like the court hearing to the last one, I went into court and the judge was like, I don't know what to do with you. No one's ever gotten this far. And then they sent me home. And then I came back again, the last court hearing, and then the judge was saying, there wasn't a cry in there. He said that, well, it's the parents with drug addiction getting their kids back. Very short list. For a father to come here and get his kids back has never happened in Kenosha County. And then they gave me my kids back. And there wasn't one dry eye in there. Well, the judge, he wasn't crying, but the DA and everybody else was crying there, and I was, you know, to get my kids back because they tell me to take a parenting class, and I took three. Take a drug and alcohol class, I took four. So everything they told me to do, I took three or four, sometimes five more. So that way they couldn't not, because I had to make it right to get my kids back. And I did everything they wanted me to do to get my children back. Problem was, is I did it because I had to, not because I wanted to per se. In a sense, I wasn't, in reality, I wasn't done getting high. I wasn't stopped getting high and did what I had to do to get my kids back to make it right. In reality, that's not how a person gets clean, you know, or stays clean. Because like I said, everybody's on probation, they're clean and sober, and they say how clean they are. They go to meetings and like, hey, that's cool. But you gotta want it for you. You want it, you gotta want to be clean. You gotta want to have a good life and see what an amazing life is. You can't do it for your children or to make a probation officer happy or anything else because you're lying to yourself. You know? And that's the biggest key. So I guess I was lying to myself too, because again, you know, I quit going to the meetings and think, well, I'm clean and sober now. I don't need to continue to burden the brother. I don't need to see Tony or anybody. This kicking a dead horse. You know, but the reality was I needed it more so. And then I thought, well, I can get high once in a while, no big deal. I can handle it. No, I learned by my relapse that I can't get high. I can't have one beer. I can't have a couple hits off a joint or take a pill. Because everything I do is to the nines. Either if I'm not going to go to the nines and get overboard, then I can't touch it. You know, because I can't just do a little. So I learned in my relapse that I can't do nothing. You know, I can't, you know, experiment or dabble. You know, it's just that's just not an option.
Well, one of the things about mood altering substances dealing with criminal thinking is if you start it, it's going to make you obsessive with wanting. We don't take one hit. We need 1,000, and 1,000 is never
Right.
enough. So we're that rare group of people that once we get started, as you said, we take mostly everything to the nine, and get
Otherwise,
obsessed
don't
with
bother
it.
calling me. I told people, I was like, oh, you want to do a line of coke? No, unless you're going to bring me a duffel bag full of cocaine, don't play with me. Don't come over with a pebble, a little tiny piece of crack, and let's get high. If I'm going to get high, we're going to get a freaking basketball. I'm not going to play her. Don't come over with a beer. Oh, let's have a couple beers. No, if I'm going to drink, I'm going to get schnockered drunk. I'm going to drink until I can't even see straight. I don't do anything a little, you know. I can't do anything a little bit. If I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna do it to the nines until I can't. Like I don't party, I don't go party and pass out. If I'm gonna go party, I'm gonna party till I become a felon. I'm gonna go party until I get arrested for breaking into a store to continue my drug habit or drug or whatever. You know, there is no just a little bit. If we're not gonna go to the nines and go all the way overboard, then and I can't play at all because there's no doing a little bit and stopping, but
See,
start.
and that's the reality of the criminal thinking and the substance abuse playing a part in itself in both. That once we start drinking, once we start using, then the store gonna get broke into, or the bank gonna get robbed, or we're going to start speeding to get to the dope, or we're going to
Oh
start
yeah, you
stealing
take
from
me
our
to a drug
families and
house,
our
I'm
kids.
gonna be there until I'm homeless, childless, out of a job. I'm going to walk into a drug house. I'm not leaving for 3 months until I've lost everything, you know. And so that's just not an option. I can't, you know. And I learned that the most. I can't do a little because there is no such thing as a little bit, you know. Either we're going till I'm a felon. I'm going to go until I get arrested in jail. And you know, I don't stop partying. I can't stop myself. So if I don't start the race, then I ain't got to finish it, you know.
Well, you
And I'm
truly
losing.
have been a success story in all that you have been able to turn around and deal with face to face. That has been very admirable of watching you do the things that you have done throughout the last 9 years. And I'm very, very happy for you, and especially the boys that I know personally through the parenting classes and watch them grow up to be healthy as they are and loving as they are towards you. I even watch your love change towards them, and the more as a father and a single father, I see that a single father is doable, where before I would have thought that him raising two kids by himself is going to be hell and high water for him and he ain't going to be able to do it. But you have proven me and a lot of other people wrong with how you have to deal with your boys. So
well, yeah, because an addiction, I couldn't raise children. I wouldn't be fit to. There's no way, you know, and no addiction or not having addiction. Yeah, I can raise kids. I was great. It's just a traumatic experience of life. Things happen that you can't control. I chose poorly towards drugs to deal with it. And that just, drugs destroyed my family, my kids. And then now my kids can see that you can overcome. My oldest just started college. He graduated high school early this year, started college this fall. My youngest one's going to be in sixth grade. And he was 2 weeks old, you know, when this all blew up into my face. So
yes,
at least my oldest, my son, youngest one, he doesn't know nothing about nothing. He ain't been jaded. And my oldest, he's seen everything. And he's become a great young man. And I at least wanted to show my kids that it's possible to screw your life up and then to turn it around, you know, and have them be proud of me instead of resenting and hating. And I think I'm accomplishing that. Because for years, Scotty had a bag in his room. And I didn't know what it was for. And I guess it's a bug-out bag. He had clothes and pack full of stuff. That way, in case that he come home one day and I overdose and died, or I went to prison or jail or something happened, that he could just grab this bag and go to a family member or to a friend's house and he'd be okay. And then for years, he's had his bag in the room and I didn't know what it was for. And then I found out that's why. It was a bug out bag just in case, you know, dad would find dad dead somewhere that he can go. And that hurt me. And that killed me to know that any time that, like, yeah, dad's sober, but for how long, you know? You know, and they're all proud that I'm sober and clean, but in the back of their mind, they're hoping they don't get a phone call one day that dad went and tricked out and got high and died or whatever. And no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm here to be sober and to be present in my kid's life, to make it the most amazing last half of my life as I can possibly do. Gotten as high as I'm ever going to get.
Yes.
You know, and I have no interest. The only interest I have is to see how amazing I can make the last half of my life. And I don't want my kids ever to resent me, you know. So right now all I'm doing is showing that it is possible to my children that you can screw it all up and then still recover, you know, and have a good life. And my kids are doing great. Scotty's a wonderful young man in college, and he's a better person than I ever could be. And he's gone through more hell than I put him through. You know, my children are the ones who've gone through the hell that I created. You know, I created the mess. I created the drugs and the situation. And my kids are prevailed. Because my kids could have been the same way. They could have been turned to drugs and doing bad things and just blamed it on me, saying that, you know, oh, because my dad did it or this and that. They could have used, you know, their trauma and experience to be bad kids.
Yeah.
But they haven't. They've used the experience to better themselves.
You know, well, I think that has a lot to do with you. And as we wrap up, and I want to thank you for coming on the show, Scott. You really enlightened us to a lot of things that we need to know that's possible about addiction and recovery, and especially dealing with children and bouncing back from your own trauma, from your dad and from your wife passing. Those are all traumatic events, but with understanding deterrent and thinking, and if we use the criminal thinking deterrent policies and the rules of what we use and formulas that we use with criminal thinking, it's possible to change any life, no matter how severe the trauma or how severe the experiences have been. It is possible to change. And
well, I'd say, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just got to say that listening to you speak, and you have the four P's in life, listening to you speak, it done wonders to me. Listening to your story, you know, and then when I went to listen to you speak in the classrooms, and I couldn't get enough of it. You know, it made me want to be a better dad. And that's why I keep coming back to Tony Moore's Birds of a Feather, because I've learned a lot in there, and listening to you, it just it's done wonders for my life.
Well,
I'm very
you've been a
appreciative
blessing to mine too,
of
brother.
knowing you. I'm very grateful to know you and Charles. And like I said, I've been coming there for almost 10 years. I only had to go there for, I don't know, less than a year and a half. I had to be there, you know. And most people, they do what they got to do and they don't come back. I've been coming back for almost 10 years, you know, because I can't get enough of being there and what you offered. And I'm very grateful. I wish more people would come because I know people go to NA meetings or places and they just keep reading the book and they know the book like the back of their hand. You know, and it's like going to a fraternity group or something, going to some kind of clique. You know, I needed to go to Birds of a Feather where people are in jeopardy of going to prison, you know, or at the last straw. You know, I can't so much, I can't say enough good things about Birds of a Feather and how what
You said
I've
a
taken.
lot. You said a lot. You said a lot, man. And you have done a lot. And the thing that we really want is what you're doing, living a lot better. You're living a lot better. And that's what the whole program is all about, giving people the opportunity and the hope to live better. And as they say, I'm a client myself of the hair club. I go to the same group that I try to help. I'm getting help from the same people. So this has been
Right,
Tony
you
Moore.
work it.
Yes, sir. This has been Tony Moore. I've been with my guest, Scott Durkin, and my executive producers, Philip Day and Earl Weaver. And we have had a wonderful show. Thank you very much, Scott.
All right, thank you for having me, sir.
You've been listening to Criminal Thinking Deterred with Tony Moore. Visit our website, www.criminalthinking.net. Follow Criminal Thinking on Facebook and Instagram. Also, listen, follow, and download Criminal Thinking Deterred on the major podcast channels. Thank you and have a productive day.
Today gonna be better than yesterday. Making memories with my family, getting closer to my goals. Yeah, I gotta make a better way. Yeah. Today gonna be better than yesterday.